This is Audible.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away. Random House Audio presents Star Wars, Dark Nest 3, The Swarm War by Troy Denning. Read for you by Jonathan Davis. Star Pond had calmed into a dark mirror, and the caterbugs had fallen mysteriously silent. The entire Jedi Academy had descended into uneasy stillness, and Luke knew it was time. He ended the meditation with a breath, then unfolded his legs. He'd been floating cross-legged in the air, and lowered his feet to the pavilion floor. Mara was instantly at his side.
"How do you feel?"
Luke's entire body felt stiff and sore. His head was aching, and his hands were trembling. He tested his legs and found them a little wobbly.
"I'm fine," he said. "A little hungry, maybe."
"I'll bet." Continuing to hold his arm, Mara turned to leave the meditation pavilion.
"Let's get you something to eat and some rest."
Luke did not follow her.
"I can last another hour."
Through the Force, he could feel nearly the entire Jedi Order gathered in the lecture hall, waiting to learn why he had summoned them.
"We need to do this now."
"Luke, you look like you've been hanging out in Wampa Caves again," Mara said.
"You need to rest."
"Mara, it's time," Luke insisted. "Is Ben there?"
"I don't know," Mara said.
"Does Ben really need to be a part of this?"
"Sorry, but I think he does," Luke said.
"Now that Jason has convinced him that it's safe to open himself to the Force, Ben will have to make the same decision as everyone else. All the students will." Mara frowned.
"Shouldn't the children wait until they're older?"
"We'll ask them again when they become apprentices," Luke said.
"I don't know whether I'm about to save the Jedi Order or destroy it."
"I do," Mara interrupted. "The Masters are pulling the Order in 10 different directions. You have to do this or they'll tear it apart."
"It certainly looks that way," Luke said.
With Corrin Horn and Kip Duran at odds over the anti-Killick policies of the Galactic Alliance, it seemed as though every Master in the Order was trying to impose his or her own compromise on the Jedi.
"But whether this is successful or not, it's going to change the Jedi Order. If some students don't want to be a part of that, it's better for everyone to find out now."
Mara considered this, then sighed.
"I'll have Nana bring Ben over."
She pulled out her comlink and stepped to one side of the pavilion.
"And I'll let Cam and Tian know you want the students there."
"Good. Thank you." Luke continued to look out over the dark water. He'd spent the last week deep in meditation, sending a force call to the entire Jedi Order. It would have been easier to use the holonet, but many Jedi, such as Jaina and her team, were in places the holonet did not cover. Besides, Luke was trying to make a point, to subtly remind the rest of the Order that all Jedi answer to the same authority. And the strategy had worked. In every arm of the galaxy, Masters had suspended negotiations. Jedi Knights had dropped investigations. Apprentices had withdrawn from combat. There were a few Jedi stranded on remote worlds without transport, and a couple unable to suspend their activities without fatal consequences. But, for the most part, his summons had been honored. Only two Jedi Knights had willfully ignored his call, and their decision had surprised Luke less than it had hurt him. A familiar presence drew near on the path behind the meditation pavilion, and Luke spoke without turning around.
"Hello, Jason."
Jason stopped at the entrance to the pavilion.
"I'm sorry to disturb you."
Luke continued to look out on the pond.
"Come to explain why Jaina and Zek aren't here?"
"It's not their fault," Jason said, still behind Luke.
"We've had some, disagreements."
"Don't make excuses for them, Jason," Mara said, closing her comlink.
If you felt Luke's summons, so did they.
It's not that simple, Jason said. They may have thought I was trying to trick them.
Luke finally turned around. Tessar and Lobaka didn't seem to think so. Luke had felt three other Jedi Knights return to Ossus along with Jason. Neither did Tahiri.
What can I say?
Jason spread his hands.
I'm not their brother.
Mara turned to Luke. Nana's on the way with Ben, and Cam says the students have all been waiting in the lecture hall since this morning.
Thanks.
Luke joined her and Jason at the rear of the pavilion, then gestured at the path leading toward the lecture hall.
Walk with us, Jason. We need to talk.
I know, Jason said, and fell in at Luke's side between him and Mara.
You must be furious about the raid on the Chiss supply depot.
I was, Luke admitted. But your aunt convinced me that if you were involved, there had to be a good reason.
I was more than involved, Jason said.
It was my idea.
Your idea? Mara echoed.
Jason was silent a moment. Finally, he said,
I had a vision.
He stopped and looked into the crown of a red-fronded DeBurgo tree.
I saw the Chiss launch a surprise attack against the Kylix.
And so you decided to provoke the Chiss just to be certain? Luke asked.
Surely it would have been better to warn the Kylix.
Jason's fear chilled the Force.
There was more, he said. I saw the Kylix mount a counterattack. The war spread to the Galactic Alliance.
And that's why you attacked the Chiss supply depot? Mara surmised. To protect the Galactic Alliance?
Jason nodded. I had to change the dynamics of the situation. If the war had started that way, it wouldn't have stopped. Ever.
He turned to Luke.
Uncle Luke, I saw the galaxy die.
An icy ball formed in Luke's stomach.
Die? Because the Chiss launched a surprise attack?
Jason nodded.
That's why I convinced Jaina and the others to help me, to prevent the surprise attack from happening.
I see. Luke fell quiet. They came to the Crooked Way, a serpentine path of rectangular stepping stones set askew to each other so that walkers would be forced to slow down and concentrate on their journey through the garden.
Jason, do you know that you prevented what you saw in your vision? Luke asked. Can you be certain that your own actions won't bring the vision to pass?
Is that a rhetorical question, Master? Jason asked.
Not entirely, Luke replied. I need to be sure I know everything.
Even Yoda didn't know everything, Jason said, smiling. But the future is still in motion, if that's what you're asking.
Thank you, Luke said. But I still wish you hadn't acted so forcefully.
I had to do something, Jason said. And when it comes to the future, Uncle Luke, don't we always plot the next jump blind?
We do, Luke said. That's why it's usually wise to be cautious.
I see. Jason glanced up the Crooked Way, where the steeply pitched roof of the lecture hall loomed behind a hedge of bamwood. So you summoned the entire Jedi Order to Ossus to do something cautious?
Luke put on an exaggerated frown.
I said, usually, Jason. He let out a melodramatic sigh to show that he wasn't truly angry, then said,
Go on ahead. I can see that you're a disrespectful young nephew who delights in embarrassing his elders.
Of course, Master. Jason smiled and bowed, then started up the Crooked Way. Luke watched him go, wondering whether the jump he was about to make with the future of the Order was any less bold or blind than the one his nephew had made in attacking the supply depot.
You have to do something, Mara said, and this is the best choice.
I know, Luke said.
That's what worries me.
Luke followed, taking his time, concentrating on the musky smell of the garden soil, deliberately focusing his thoughts on something other than the address he was about to give. By the time they reached the eastern gable of the lecture hall, a familiar calm had come over Luke. He slid open the instructor's door and led the way down a short wood-floored hallway. As they approached the sliding panel at the end, the Jedi on the other side sensed their presence, and the low murmur in the auditorium died away. Mara kissed Luke on the cheek, then whispered, "You can do this, Luke."
"I know," Luke said, "but keep a stun grenade handy just in case."
Mara smiled. "You won't need a grenade. They're going to be stunned."
She pulled the panel aside, revealing a simple but soaring auditorium with pillars of pale wood. The Jedi were gathered in the front of the room. Kip Duren and his supporters were clustered near the left wall, and Corin Horn and his group were bunched along the right. Jason and Ben sat in the middle, with the Solos and Saba Sebatine, while the students were interspersed in small groups along both sides of the center aisle.
Luke was shocked by how small the gathering looked. Including the students and Han, there were just under 300 people in a hall that had been designed to hold 2,000, the Academy's entire complement of Jedi and support staff. Luke stopped in the middle of the dais and took a deep breath. So much depended on what he was about to say, and on how the Jedi responded to it.
35 standard years ago, I became the last guardian of an ancient order that had thrived for 1,000 generations. During all that time, no evil dared challenge its power. No honest being ever questioned its integrity. Yet fall it did, brought low by the treachery of a Sith Lord who disguised himself as a friend and an ally. Only a handful of masters survived, hiding in deserts and swamps so that the bright light that was the Jedi Order would not be extinguished. Under the guidance of two of those masters, I became the instrument of the Jedi's return, and I have dedicated myself to rekindling the light of their order. Ours may be a smaller, paler beacon than the one that once lit the way for the Old Republic, but it has been growing, both in size and in brilliance. We have been growing until now. Now we are threatened by a different enemy, one that I brought into our midst through my misunderstanding of the old practices. In my arrogance, I believed we had found a better way, one more in tune with the challenges we face in our time. I was wrong.
A murmur of soft protest rustled through the hall, and the force near both Kip and Corin grew unsettled with guilt. Luke raised his hand for silence.
"In the order I envisioned, we served the Force by following our own consciences. We taught our apprentices well, and we trusted them to follow their own hearts. It was a splendid dream, but it has been growing more impractical for some time now.
My mistake was in forgetting that good beings can disagree. They can evaluate all of the evidence and study it from every angle and still reach opposite conclusions. And each side can believe with pure hearts that only their view is right. When that happens, it's easy to lose sight of something far more important than who's right and who's wrong. When the Jedi are at odds with each other, they are at odds with the Force. And when the Jedi are at odds with the Force, they can't perform their duty to themselves, to the Order, or to the Alliance."
The hall fell utterly silent. Luke remained quiet, not to build the suspense, but to give every Jedi time to reflect on his or her own part in the crisis. Ben and the students were sitting very still, with their chins pressed to their chests, but their eyes were darting from side to side, looking for clues as to how they should respond. Tessar Sebatine flattened his scales, betraying the shame he felt for helping precipitate the crisis, and Lobaka slumped his enormous shoulders. Tahiri sat up straight and stared stonily ahead, her stiff bearing an unsuccessful attempt to disguise her guilty feelings. Only Leia seemed unaffected by the subtle chastisement. She sat with her fingers steepled in front of her, studying Luke with a furrowed brow and a Force presence so guarded he couldn't read her emotions. When the mood in the hall began to shift toward regret, Luke spoke again. "I've meditated at length, and I've concluded that how we respond to a crisis, the one facing us now or any other, is far less important than responding to it together. Even with the Force to guide us, we're only mortal. We are going to make mistakes. But mistakes by themselves will never destroy us. As long as we work together, we'll always have the strength to recover. What we can't recover from is fighting among ourselves. it will leave us too exhausted to face our enemies. And that is what Lomi, Plo, and the Dark Nest want. It's the only way they can defeat us. So I'm asking each of you to rethink your commitment to the Jedi. If you can't place the good of the Order above all else and follow the direction chosen by your superiors, I'm asking you to leave. If you have other duties or loyalties that come before the Order, I'm asking you to leave. If you cannot be a Jedi Knight first, I'm asking you not to be a Jedi Knight at all. Luke took his time, looking from one shocked face to another. Only Leia seemed dismayed, but he had expected that. Think about your choice carefully. When you are ready, come to me and let me know what you have decided. A stunned silence still lay over the lecture hall as Leia stepped onto the dais and started after her brother. As a Jedi Knight, it was hardly her place to challenge a decree from the Order's most senior master, but she knew what Luke was doing, even if he did not. She entered the small corridor behind the dais, and that was when Han caught up and took her arm. He slid the panel shut behind them, then whispered,
"Hold on! Don't you want to talk this over before you quit?"
"Relax, Han. I'm not leaving the Order." Leia glanced down the corridor, toward the golden light spilling out the entrance to the lecture hall's small library. Inside, calmly awaiting the storm, she could sense her brother's presence. "I just need to talk some sense into Luke before this gets out of hand."
"Are you sure?" Han asked. "I mean, you're not even a master."
"I'm his sister," Leia retorted. "That gives me special privileges." She strode down the corridor and entered the library without announcing herself. Luke was seated on a mat at the far end of the room, with a low writing table before him and the holonet access terminal at his back. Mara stood beside him at one end of the table, her green eyes as hard and unfathomable as a Yumlar crystal. When she saw Leia, Mara cocked her brow. "I doubt you're here to pledge your obedience to the Order." "I'm not." Leia stopped in front of the table and glared down at Luke.
"Do you know what you've just done?"
"Of course," Luke said. "It's called the Rubogian Gambit." Leia's aggravation gave way to shock.
"You're taking control of the Order as a ploy?"
"He has to do something," Mara said. "The Order is falling apart." Leia considered her brother's plan for a moment, growing calmer as she reflected on his other options, or rather, his lack of them. Finally, she said, "Your provocation isn't strong enough. Most of the Jedi in that hall want you to take over. They won't resist you."
"I hope they'll change their minds once they reflect on it," Luke answered. "If not, then I'll have to take control of the Order."
"For its own good," Leia said. Her rusty political instincts began to trip alarms inside her head. "Do you know how many despots have said the same thing to me?" "Luke is not a despot." Mara's voice grew a little heated. "He doesn't even want control."
"I know."
Leia kept her gaze on her brother. "But that doesn't make this any less dangerous. If the Gambit fails, you'll be reducing the Order to a personality cult."
"Then let's hope my ultimatum helps the Masters find a way to work together again."
Luke's eyes grew hard.
"I will not let them tear the Jedi apart."
"Even if it means anointing yourself King of the Jedi?" Leia pressed.
"Yes, Leia, even if it means that."
Surprised by the sudden sharpness in her brother's voice, Leia fell into an uneasy silence. When the silence became unbearable, Han stepped to the end of the table opposite Mara.
"Okay, I'm lost. Will somebody please slow down and tell me what the blazes a Rubogian Gambit is?"
"It's a diplomatic ploy," Leia explained. "You distract your counterpart with a provocative assertion, hoping he's so upset that he doesn't notice what you're really doing."
"In other words, you pull a bait and switch."
Han scowled at Luke.
"So you don't want the Jedi to put the Order first?"
"Actually, that's what I do want," Luke said.
"Our problem now is that everybody puts the Order last. Corrin thinks we exist to serve the Alliance.
and Kip is convinced we should follow nothing but our own consciences. Meanwhile, Jaina and her team believe our first duty is to protect the weak from aggression.
I'm with you so far, Han said. Where I make a bad jump is the part where you take full control. If you don't want to be King of the Jedi, why are you using the swindle to slip it past everyone in the Order?
Luke is trying to unite the Masters against him, Han, Leia explained.
Yeah, I get that part. Han furrowed his brow. But like I said, if Luke doesn't want to be king, why try slipping it past everyone?
Because being sneaky is the only way to convince the Masters I really want this, Luke said. The threat has to be big, and it has to be real. If I'm too obvious, they'll know I'm trying to manipulate them, and it won't work.
Luke suddenly lifted his chin and looked past them toward the entrance to the library.
This will have to be the end of our discussion. The first Jedi is coming to tell me her decision.
A sad heaviness began to fill Leia's chest.
Of course.
She took Han's hand and turned to go. Danny Kui was already coming through the entrance, her blue eyes shining with unshed tears. When she saw Leia and Han already in the room, she stopped abruptly and looked a little flustered.
I'm sorry. She started to withdraw. I'll come back later.
That's okay, Danny, Leia said. We were finished here anyway. Leia started to lead Han past, but Danny put up her hand to stop them.
Please don't leave on my account. This won't take long, and what I have to say isn't private.
Without waiting for a reply, Danny turned to Luke.
Master Skywalker, I hope you won't think I don't value what I have learned with the Jedi because I came to this decision quickly, but I was never a true member of the Order, and my future lies with Zonama Seacott. There is still so much to learn from her that I'd be lying to myself if I said that the Jedi came first. I wish you and the Jedi the best, but I'm going to return to Zonama Seacott.
I understand, Danny. Luke rose and stepped around the table, then took her hands in his.
You were a tremendous help to the Jedi in our most desperate hour, but we've all known for some time that your destiny lies elsewhere.
Thank you. And may the Force be with you always.
Danny released Luke and embraced Mara and Leia and Han, then left the room.
She was barely gone before Tenel Ka, the Queen Mother of Hapes, strode in. She held her dimpled chin high and her shoulders square, but the resolve in her eyes was more heartbreaking than reassuring.
Tenel Ka flashed Leia a sad smile, then turned to Luke.
Master Skywalker, I would like nothing more than to place myself entirely at the Jedi Order's disposal.
She bit her lip, then reached under the Jedi robe she had donned for her visit, and removed her lightsaber from its clip.
And if there were only myself and my daughter to consider, perhaps I would. But that would be irresponsible. I am the sole able-bodied sovereign of an interstellar empire, and if I were to relinquish my throne, my nobles would spill lakes of blood fighting to take my place.
She held out her lightsaber to Luke.
It is with great regret that I must surrender this. I simply cannot fulfill the duties of a knight in the Jedi Order.
I understand.
Luke accepted Tenel Ka's lightsaber, then pushed it back into her hand.
But please, keep your lightsaber. You earned the right to carry it, and that can never be taken away.
Tenel Ka managed a sad smile.
Thank you, Master Skywalker. Your gesture means a great deal to me.
Thank you, Queen Mother, Luke said.
You may have assumed other duties for now, but you carry within you everything that a Jedi Knight is. Perhaps one day, you will be free to return to the Order. There will always be a place for you.
Tenel Ka's smile turned more hopeful.
Yes, perhaps that is so.
The Queen Mother spun and left the room. A moment later, Corrin Horn appeared at the entrance to the library and bowed respectfully.
Master Skywalker, would now be a good time to speak with you? He asked.
Of course.
Luke glanced meaningfully in Leia and Han's direction, then returned to his mat behind the writing table and sat.
Come in.
Leia took Han's hand again and started past Corrin.
Excuse us, Corrin. We were just leaving.
Please don't. At least, not yet. Corrin said. I've already said this to the rest of the Order, and I'd like you to hear it too.
Leia glanced at Luke for permission, then nodded.
If you wish.
Corrin went to the center of the room and clasped his hands behind his back.
Master Skywalker, first, I would like to apologize for the part I played in this crisis. I can see now that in complying with Chief Omis's request that I become the Order's temporary leader, I was playing directly into his hands.
Yes, you were, Luke said.
Corrin swallowed, then fixed his gaze on the wall behind Luke's head.
I assure you it was never my intention to usurp anyone's authority, but when it grew clear how bad Jedi relations had grown with Chief Omis and the Alliance, I felt something had to be done.
I can see now how badly mistaken I was.
Mistakes are always easy to see in retrospect, Luke said mildly. Corrin glanced down at Luke, clearly uncertain how he was taking the apology.
But I do carry the good of the Order utmost in my heart.
Good, Luke said.
That's why I think it might be best if I left.
Corrin's voice was choked with emotion.
My presence can only be a divisive element.
I see.
Luke braced his elbows on the writing table, then rested his chin on his steepled fingers.
Corrin, isn't this the second time you've offered to leave the Order for its own good? It is. After the destruction of Ithor.
Don't let there be a third, Luke interrupted. I won't stop you next time.
Corrin frowned, clearly confused.
Stop me?
Corrin, you may have been naive for believing the Yuuzhan Vong would honor their word, but they destroyed Ithor, not you, Luke said.
And the mistakes that led the Jedi into our current crisis are more mine than anyone else's. So please, stop trying to shoulder the entire galaxy's guilt by yourself.
To be honest, it makes you look a bit pompous.
Corrin looked as though someone had detonated a stun grenade in his face.
Pompous?
Luke nodded. I hope you don't mind me telling you that in front of others, but you're the one who invited them to stay.
Corrin glanced over at Leia and Han.
Of course not.
Good, Luke said. Then we're all settled. You're going to continue as a Jedi, and your loyalty to the Order comes first.
Yes, Corrin nodded. Of course.
Luke smiled broadly.
I'm glad. We couldn't afford to lose you, Corrin. I don't think you realize just how valuable you are. The Jedi do have a duty to support the Galactic Alliance, far more than we have been. And nobody represents that viewpoint better than you do.
Thank you.
Corrin remained in the center of the room looking confused. After a moment, Luke said,
That's all, Corrin,
unless there's something else.
Actually, there is, Corrin said.
I think the other masters have all chosen to stay as well. After I spoke with them, they asked me to tell you they would be waiting in the auditorium.
They did.
Luke raised his brow and tried to avoid showing the satisfaction that Leia sensed through their twin bond.
I guess I should go hear what they have to say.
Leia stepped aside. Then she and the others followed Luke into the auditorium. The room was even emptier than before, with Kip, Saba, and the rest of the masters gathered in a tight cluster near the front of the speaking dais, holding an animated conversation in barely civil tones. Tessar, Lobaka, Tahiri, and Tekli were seated together a few rows back, trying not to be too obvious in their eavesdropping. Jason sat on the opposite side of the aisle, appearing more interested in his conversation with Ben than in whatever the masters were whispering about. When Han saw the gathering of masters, he hopped off the dais and held his hand out toward Ben.
It looks like we're going to be a little out of place at this meeting, partner. Why don't we go back over to the Falcon and work on that warp vortex problem I was telling you about?
Ben's eyes lit up. He started to say goodbye to Jason until Kenth Hamner rose and spoke from among the masters.
Actually, Captain Solo, we'd like you to stay.
Han cast a worried look in Leia's direction, and she knew they were thinking the same thing, that Jaina and Zek were going to be a big part of this conversation.
Yeah, sure, he said. Whatever you want.
Ben twisted his freckled face into a sour expression.
What about the Falcon's vortex problem?
Don't worry about that, kid, Han said to him. Vortex stabilizers don't fix themselves. It'll be there waiting when we're ready.
Perhaps Ben's defender droid could take him home?
Kenth glanced toward the speaking dais.
If that's acceptable to the Master Skywalker.
Of course,
Mara said. Nana!
The big defender droid stepped out of the shadows, then extended her metallic hand and waited as Ben reluctantly shuffled up the aisle to join her. Once the pair had left the hall, Kanth turned to Han.
Thank you for staying, Captain Solo.
Always glad to help, Han said cautiously. So, what's this about?
In a minute. Kanth waved Han toward a seat. First, we would like to ask how Master Skywalker sees family fitting into his new view of a Jedi's commitment to the Order.
I'm not saying we have to abandon our loved ones, Luke said, stepping between Leia and the Masters. But obviously, any Jedi is required to be away from his or her family for extended periods. When Luke remained between Leia and the Masters, she took the hint and stepped off the dais, then went to Han's side. They both sat on the bench with Jason. As Luke and the Masters continued to clarify just what Luke meant by placing the Order first, Han leaned close to Jason's ear.
Tenel Ka left the Order, he whispered. Thought you'd want to know.
I already did, Jason answered.
Uncle Luke didn't leave her much choice, did he?
It only formalizes what we've all known for some time, Leia said. Jason and Tenel Ka had been close throughout their teenage years, and Leia did not want Jason to allow Tenel Ka's departure to influence his own decision. Tenel Ka's duties as the Queen Mother already prevent her from participating in the Order in any meaningful way.
Jason smiled and placed his hand on Leia's knee.
Mom, I'm not going to disappear again. I've already decided to stay.
Leia was so relieved that she suspected even Han could feel it, but she kept a straight face and said,
If that's what you think is best for you, dear.
Leia's attention was drawn to the gathering of Masters by a sudden lull in their conversation. She looked up to find Luke seated on the edge of the dais, motioning everyone forward. As they all approached, she sensed a certain hopefulness in her brother's presence. The Masters have agreed that the Order's first responsibility during any crisis is to respond in a coherent and united fashion. Now the question is, what are we going to do about the Killix?
That's why we asked all of you to stay, Trissina Lobi said, turning to Leia and the others. You know more about the Killix than any of us, so your insights will guide our decision.
Luke nodded his agreement. I'd like to ask Jason to share his vision with the rest of us.
Vision? Corrin asked.
It's why I organized the attack on Supply Depot Thrago, Jason explained, going to stand between the Masters and the dais. I saw the Chiss launch a massive surprise attack against the Killix.
Kanth frowned.
Surely you didn't think that you could prevent...
Let him finish, Luke said, raising his hand to silence the Master.
Jason continued.
What really frightened me about the vision was that the Chiss failed to destroy the colony. Instead, I saw the Killix mount a counterattack, and the war spread to the Galactic Alliance.
Let me see if I understand this, Corrin said, frowning in confusion. You saw the war spreading to the Galactic Alliance, so you attacked the Chiss to keep that from happening? That sounds crazy, Jason.
Jason nodded. It's convoluted, I know, but I felt we had to change the dynamic.
Obviously, the Chiss are still attacking, and the Galactic Alliance is still being dragged into the war.
Kent's tone was sharp.
Not only are we fighting in the Utagedu Nebula, now we have the Chiss mobilizing against us because they think we gave the Akbar to the Killix. I don't see that your attack accomplished anything except to hasten the war and make everything vastly more complicated.
It convinced the Chiss they couldn't win with a quick strike, Han said, coming to Jason's defense.
At least now there's some chance you can bring this mess under control before it erupts into a galaxy-wide bug stomp.
Han is right, Corrin said. Besides, debating our past mistakes, whether or not they were mistakes, won't solve this problem. We need to talk about how we're going to stop this war before it gets out of control.
The Masters nodded their agreement, but fell silent and stared at the floor, clearly reluctant to launch into the same argument that had been threatening to tear the Order apart for several months. Finally, Jason spoke up.
I know how to stop the war.
Everybody's brow, including Leia's, went up. Jason stepped over next to Luke, placing himself squarely in front of the Masters.
We kill Raynar Thule.
What? What was cried by several Jedi at once. Among them, Tessar Sebatine and the other young Jedi Knights who'd accompanied Jason on the raid against Supply Depot Thrago.
Did you see that in your vision too?
Corrin asked.
It's the only way to prevent the war, Jason said calmly. Most insect species have an immense mortality rate. One egg out of 1,000 might produce a larva that survives to become an imago and produce young of its own. When Raynar became a joiner...
But killing Raynar would destroy the colony,
Tessar rasped.
I believe that's the point, Kent said. They've declared war on 2 other galactic civilizations.
Lobako roared an objection, protesting that the Dark Nest was causing all the trouble.
Jason has obviously given this a lot of thought, Luke said. Why don't we hear him out?
When Raynar became a joiner, the Killiks began to value the lives of individual Nest members, Jason continued. Their population exploded. They began to strip their own worlds bare. And that's when the colony was born and began to infringe on Chiss space.
But will killing Raynar change that now?
Saba asked from the front bench.
The Killigs have already changed. This one does not see how removing Raynar will change them back.
Because the change is a learned behavior. Jason was obviously ready with his answer. Raynar is the only element of their personality that innately values individual life.
So we remove Raynar and they unlearn the behavior?
Kenth asked.
Exactly, Jason said.
Not exactly, Corrin said. You're forgetting the Dark Nest. By all accounts, they're already running the colony from behind the scenes. If we take out Raynar, what's to prevent Lomi Plo from taking over?
We have to take her and Alima Rar out too, Jason said. I'm sorry, I thought that was a given.
When no one objected, Luke asked. So everyone agrees on that much then? The Dark Nest must be destroyed.
Assuming we can, Han muttered. We've tried that before, remember?
We've learned a lot since then, Jason insisted. This time we'll succeed.
So we kill one of our own?
Corrin shook his head harshly.
I can't believe that's our best option. It goes against everything I feel as a Jedi. We're not assassins. We don't betray our own, and we don't destroy entire civilizations.
Corrin, we talked about that too, Leia reminded him. It's because Raynar is a Jedi that we must act. He's become a threat to the galaxy, and it's our duty to stop him.
Our duty? Corrin demanded. What about Jaina and Zek? What about them?
Han shot back.
They're joiners too, Corrin pointed out.
Will you be so eager to kill them when they take Raynar's place? They're not going to take Raynar's place, Han shouted. You can't know that. Corrin replied. Jaina has always done as she pleases, and now she's with the colony.
He turned back to Leia.
So I want to know. Will you say the same thing when we have to go after Jaina and Zek?
That's a baseless question, and you know it, Leia said.
And they were off. Voices rising, tempers flaring, gestures growing increasingly sharp. Within minutes, it grew apparent that they'd reached an impasse, and Leia sensed her brother's frustration building. His attempt to unite the Masters had failed miserably.
Thank you.
Though Luke spoke softly, he used the Force to project his words into the minds of everyone present. The effect was immediate. The argument came to a sudden halt, and the entire group turned to face him.
Thank you for your opinions.
Luke stepped back onto the dais. I'll consider them all carefully and let you know what I decide.
Kip frowned. What you decide?
Yes, Kip, Mara said. What Luke decides. Don't you think that's best? Kip's brow rose. Then he looked around him at the faces of the other Masters, many still flushed with the emotions of their argument, and slowly seemed to realize what Leia already had. Luke was taking control of the Order. Before Kip found the breath to answer, Han turned and started up the aisle toward the exit. his boot heels clunking on the wood floor. Leia started after him, almost running to catch up. Luke seemed content to watch them go in silence, but not Saba.
Jedi Solo, where are you going?
The bearable demanded. With Han, Leia replied. To get our daughter back.
What about the order?
Saba asked. Leia did not even turn around. What order? With dozens of battered transports hanging on the wax-coated walls at every possible angle, and swarms of orange worker killix floating war cargo through the microgravity, the Lysel hangar looked even busier than the last time Han and Leia had visited. The largest available berth was a wedge near the top of the sphere, and even that looked barely big enough for the bulky Dray-class transport the Solos had borrowed from Lando to complete their disguise. Han rolled the Swift onto its back and began to ease it toward the empty spot. Leia inhaled sharply, then activated the landing cams and studied the co-pilot's display.
Wait, our clearance is only half a meter.
That much?
Han, this isn't the Falcon.
You don't have to tell me, Han said. This big tub handles like an asteroid.
I think we should wait for a larger berth to open up, Leia said. We're not going to win the colony's confidence by causing an accident.
We don't need their confidence.
Han jerked a thumb toward the Swift's huge cargo bay.
When they see that big mag cannon we've got back there, they're going to beg us to take it out to the front lines.
That's quite unlikely, Captain Solo,
C-3PO said.
Insect species rarely have a sense of charity, so it simply would not occur to them to appeal to your compassion.
Han means they'll be eager to contract with us, Leia said, which is all the more reason to wait. We don't want to overplay our hand. Jaina and Zek will still be in the front lines when we get there.
Wait?
Han shook his head and continued to ease the Swift toward the landing spot. One of the adjacent transports, an ancient Republic Senar Systems courier class, had extended its boarding ramp into the space he intended to occupy. But he wasn't worried. The Swift's landing struts were far enough apart to straddle the ramp, and the Lysel workers, streaming up and down the incline, were used to dodging ships.
It could take days for another berth to open.
It won't take more than an hour. Leia pointed out the top of the cockpit canopy. That freight queen is making ready to leave.
Han looked, but instead of the freight queen, his gaze fell on a sharp-looking Mon Calamari sailfish berthed directly below them in the middle of the hangar floor.
The ramp was down, and there were two flakaks standing guard outside, keeping watch over a ragged mob of Verpine, Vratix, and Fefsi, who seemed to be waiting for an audience with the captain of the sailfish. The sight sent a cold shudder down Han's spine.
Is that a long eye booster on the back of that sailfish's rectenna dish?
How should I know? Leia asked, frowning at the vessel. And why would I care?
Because that's what Lando adds to the sensor package on all his ships, Han said,
including that sailfish he sold to June and Tarfang. The one they traded to the Squibs?
That one, Han confirmed.
Leia eyed the sailfish for a moment, now clearly as interested in the vessel as Han was. We'll need to take a closer look.
May I suggest you do that after we finish berthing? We seem to be in danger of setting down on top of another ship.
Han glanced at his display and saw that one of the strut cams showed a landing skid poised to set down atop the courier's dorsal observation bubble.
Relax, chip brain.
Han fired an attitude thruster to spin the Swift back into proper position. An instant later, the Swift touched down and settled onto its struts. Han unbuckled his crash webbing, then went to the back of the flight deck. He turned in a slow circle, displaying the elaborate robes, long-haired wig, and white contact lenses he wore as part of his disguise.
Everything in place?
Very Arcanian, Leia said. She was disguised as a feline female, with a face covered in fine green scales, beads and combs adorning her long hair, and a spiny dorsal ridge showing through her shape-hugging jumpsuit. How do I look?
Good. Great, even.
Han flashed a lustful smile. Leia pushed past him, shaking her head. At least I know the artificial pheromones are working. Han followed her aft, fairly certain that it wasn't the pheromones he was reacting to. He and Leia had been married for nearly 30 years, and not a day passed when he still did not ache for her. They reached the main hatch, where Cockmame and Meewaw were waiting in their disguises. The Nogri were doing their best to waddle about and cock their heads in the characteristic expressions of curious Ewoks, but somehow they still looked far too graceful. Han slipped the voice synthesizer into his mouth, then turned and spoke to the Nogri in a deep, booming tone.
"Try to be a little clumsy. Maybe drop some stuff and trip once or twice."
The pair looked at Han as though he'd asked Ewoks to fly.
"Well, do what you can."
He lowered the boarding ramp and nearly gagged on the clammy, too sweet air that rolled through the hatchway. The cacophony of ticking and thrumming was even louder than the last time he was here. A dozen waist-high killiks with deep orange thoraxes and blue abdomens appeared at the bottom of the ramp and started to ascend without requesting permission. Han stepped aside and, gritting his teeth at their lack of ship etiquette, waved the bugs aboard. They brushed past him and immediately began to spread out through the swift, running their feathery antennae over every available surface and clacking their mandibles in interest. Han waved them toward the stern.
"This way, my friends,"
he said, trying to give his best impression of a down-on-his-luck Arcanian techno-lord.
"We have something truly special for you."
When they reached the cargo hold, Han made a show of depressing the slap pad that opened the hatch.
"I present the Mag Cannon Max, the finest piece of magnetic coil artillery in the galaxy."
The three killiks stepped through the hatch, then stopped inside and craned their necks back to stare up at the weapon's armored housing, all three stories of it. Han nodded to Leia, who went over to the base of the weapon and began a carefully rehearsed sales pitch in the sultry, if completely artificial, voice of a Feline.
"The economical Mag Cannon Max delivers a planetary defense-grade firepower in a self-contained package. With a fully shielded housing and an internal sensor suite, this naughty girl can find a bombarding star destroyer as easily as she can spill its guts."
Leia flashed a winsome Feline smile, then turned to lead the way toward the weapon's giant telescoping barrels. Instead of following, the Killiks turned to Han and began to thrum their thoraxes.
"They would like to know how they move a weapon of this size. Does it have its own propulsion system?"
Han addressed the bugs directly.
"You don't move it. We transport and install wherever you need it, even in the war zone."
Han gave them a regal Arcanian smile.
"Our service package is superior."
All three bugs turned and left the hold. Han frowned and started after them.
"So you'll take it?"
The last Killik in line turned and shook its head emphatically.
"Oh, dear. She says the colony has no use for weapons emplacements. The Chiss are overrunning their worlds too fast."
The Killik started up the corridor again, chest rumbling.
"But the repeating blasters and thermal detonators in the secret weapons locker inside the wall behind the main engineering terminal will prove very useful. Lysel has left a dozen shine balls and 50 waxes of golden membrosia at the foot of the boarding ramp in exchange."
"That's all?"
Han followed them to the ramp, where Cockmame and Meewaw were already bringing the shine balls and membrosia aboard, still looking far too graceful for Ewoks.
"We didn't come all the way."
Han's objection came to an abrupt end when he found himself unable to continue down the ramp after the bugs, held immobile by the Force. Leia came and took him by the arm.
"Lord Risto, there's no use forcing the situation," she cooed in her Feline voice. "If Lysel doesn't want the gun, we'll just have to find another way to sell it."
Leia's words began to calm Han immediately. He was allowing his frustration to affect his judgment, and that could be very dangerous indeed, given how deep they were inside enemy territory. Han placed his hand over Leia's.
"Thank you, Cyrul. You're right."
He looked down toward the Mon Calamari sailfish sitting below them in the middle of the hangar floor.
and I think I know just where to start looking.
Leia watched in confusion as Han started down the wall, picking his way through the crowded transaction hangar toward the suspicious sailfish. With Defense Force Intelligence actively searching for the squibs, the Lysel Nest seemed a likely place for the trio to take refuge, and Han clearly intended to use that fact to find Jaina. What Leia did not understand was how, and if she knew her husband, neither did Han. Leia instructed C-3PO and the Nogri to stay with the Swift, then descended the ramp and started after Han, her feet squeck-squecking in the soft wax that lined the interior of the nest. A few steps later, Leia caught up to Han and leaned close.
Han, what are you doing?
Maybe they're interested in a mag cannon, Max.
Han pointed at the sailfish.
Have you lost your mind?
Leia hissed. We can't let the squibs know we're here.
Sure we can. They're not gonna tell anybody.
They're not?
No way.
Han glanced around, then whispered.
June and Tarfang used to work for those furry little backstabbers, and the last thing they want is for me to tell Lysel that it was their employees who helped me and Luke escape Sarus on Wotaba.
They circled around an old Gallifrey light transport, then pushed through the small crowd of insects waiting outside the sailfish. Leia followed Han to the foot of the boarding ramp, where they stopped in front of two huge Flakax guards. Standing a little taller than a Wookiee, with sharp, beak-like proboscises, black chitina shells, and long, ovoid abdomens hanging beneath their thoraxes, the pair made truly intimidating sentries, especially since Flakax who left their homeworlds tended to become psychopaths.
We're here to see the squibs,
Han said.
Tell them they still owe us for Pavo Prime.
The sentry's huge compound eyes studied Leia and Han indifferently.
It wouldn't be wise to keep us waiting, Leia pressed. We happen to be old friends.
This drew a chorus of amused clacks and hisses from the insect crews waiting outside the sailfish, and one of the Flakax held out a three-pincered hand.
Appointment vouchers cost 50 credits each.
Appointment vouchers?
Han repeated.
You expect us to stand here for nothing?
The second Flakax demanded. Leia stepped forward, craning her neck back to stare up at the Flakax's wedge-shaped head.
We don't need an appointment voucher, she said, using the Force to influence the insect's mind. We're expected.
They don't need a voucher, the first Flakax said. The directors are expecting them.
The second remained where he was, gnashing his mandibles and blocking the base of the ramp.
They are? Now?
Yeah.
Han pulled a credit chit from his pocket.
What's the going price for being expected? 10?
The Flakax flattened his antennae.
25.
25?
Han objected.
That's...
A paltry amount. Not worth the effort to negotiate.
Leia interrupted.
Why don't we just add it to the director's account, Lord Risto? That way everyone will be happy.
Very well.
Han continued to glare at the Flakax, but passed the credits over and slipped back into the character of a haughty Arcanian.
If the squibs object, I'll instruct them to bring the matter up with you.
The Flakax gave a little abdomen shudder, but stepped aside and waved Leia and Han through the sailfish's airlock. Leia followed Han into the forward salon, where a pair of Verpine pilots stood facing the interior of a large curved table piled high with trinkets and gadgets. On the other side of the table, a single Lysel Killick stood behind three seated squibs.
Grateful for the cargo, one of the Verpine was saying. But we need more delivery time. If anything goes wrong, we won't make the date.
What could go wrong?
The squib on the left asked. With graying fur, a wrinkled snout, and red bags under his big brown eyes, Grease looked as though he had aged 60 years in the 30 that had passed since Leia had first met him.
Just follow the route we give you. Everything will be fine.
It's the Chiss that concern us, Director, the second Verpine explained. Tenupe is on the front lines, you know.
That's why we saved this run for you.
The squib on the right said. One of his ears no longer stood up straight, instead lying at an angle like a broken antenna. And his voice was so harsh and raspy that Han barely recognized it as Sly's.
We wouldn't trust just anyone with this, you know. We have placed our complete faith in you. Consider it a gift.
The two Verpine glanced at each other nervously. Then the first said,
We've heard the Chiss are moving fast. What happens if they overrun the base before we deliver? There's no one else out there who would want your Tibana X. Especially not so much.
Han's heart began to pound in excitement. As far as he knew, there was only one use for Tibana X. It was fuel for Jedi stealth X's.
Arcake, you came to us begging for a cargo. But all you've done since we granted it to you is ask, what if this, what if that?
Imala said.
Honestly, we are beginning to think you aren't grateful.
The antennae of both Verpine went flat against their heads.
No, we're very grateful, Director.
Arcake said.
We just don't want to fail you.
We'll take the cargo,
Han said, stepping into the cabin. The first Verpine, Arcake, turned with fury in his dark eyes, but his anger swiftly changed to confusion as Leia slinked toward him in her feline costume.
I hope you don't mind.
She touched him through the Force, implanting the suggestion that she was only repeating what he already believed.
But you don't need this run. Too many things can go wrong.
Mind? Why should we mind?
Arcake asked.
Too many things can go wrong. Arcake!
The second Verpine slapped the first in the back of the head.
Fool! She's using her pheromones on you.
So?
Arcake asked his companion.
This run doesn't have anything to do with our fight anyway. So be quiet!
The second Verpine turned to the squibs.
We'll take the run, Director.
Imala motioned toward a corridor, and a much younger squib, with red-brown fur and black ear tufts, entered the salon.
Crafty will tend to the details. Be sure to tip generously. It makes his charts more accurate.
Of course.
Raytree the Verpine bowed nervously.
Thank you.
He took Arkik's arm and dragged him after the young squib. Once they were gone, Han joined Leia in front of the table.
Quite an operation you have here. Brokering war cargo and pushing Black Mambrosia. The Hutts could learn a few things from you.
Imala sat up with pride.
You're not the first to say so.
Not that it's any business of yours,
Grease said. He leaned forward, his nose twitching and his eyes narrow.
Do we know you?
Before Han could launch into his indignant act, the Killick standing behind the squibs began to rumble its thorax, no doubt explaining that Lysel had already transacted with them. Leia stepped closer to the squib's table.
Actually, you might remember us from Pavo Prime, she said. And before that, we worked together on Tatooine.
Tatooine?
Sly reached across the table, then took Leia's hand and rubbed it across his cheek. His ears went flat against his head.
You!
We're old friends.
Leia kept her gaze fixed on the squibs, who were all trying to slowly lower their hands out of sight below the table, no doubt reaching for their holdout blasters. We're not here to start trouble, as long as no one else starts it either. She cast a meaningful glare at the squibs' hands, and all three returned their palms to the edge of the table.
Then why are you here?
Grease demanded.
Lysel already told you the colony doesn't need a mag cannon.
Can't an old friend pay a social call?
Han smiled and fixed Grease with a threatening glare.
I just wanted to tell you that I ran into a couple of your contract employees not so long ago. They were a great help to me and a good friend of mine.
He glanced at the Killick behind them.
I thought maybe I should tell you about it.
No!
All three squibs said together.
We mean, there's no need.
Sly added quickly.
We already know everything.
You're sure? Leia asked.
Even about how they...
We heard.
Grease said. He turned toward the same corridor from which Imala's son Crafty had emerged. On cue, a small female with silky black fur appeared.
Now, we really are very busy. Saniki will see you out.
That's all the time you have for your friends?